90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll find out about the new Garfield Park Fountain Fest.
I'll chat with columnist David Hoppe about his new book.
And I'll get a preview of this year's Indie Jazz Fest. Plus, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Indianapolis has a claim to one of the grandest city parks in the country, Garfield Park, on the near south side. Next Saturday, September 13th, you can party in Garfield Park to support a good cause, the restoration of the famous fountains and other striking elements of this grand green spaces landscape design. Sharon Gamble invited Garfield Park super volunteer Joellen Meyer-Sharp to our studio to learn more about Fountain Fest.
So before we talk about Fountain Fest, how did you get involved with Garfield Park in the first place?
Well, it's the park of my youth. I grew up in that park. I went to the late, great St. Catherine Grade School, which was right on Shelby Street. And now I think there's like a video store there or something like that across from Garfield Bakery. But we used to, you know, my parents, we would go there. It was not uncommon on Sundays to have dinner. We'd all pile in the car. We'd go to Garfield Park and walk around the sunken fountains and have the misty spray in our faces and the colored lights. And then we'd trek off to Linder's ice cream store for a treat. And we would go sledding on the hills, and we... At St. Catherine's, we would have school picnics there. And, you know, it was just the, you know, the center of, you know, the park that was the center of my growing up on the south side.
We have a lot of beautiful parks in Indianapolis, but somehow Garfield has always set itself apart for me for being the singularly most beautiful landscaped and maybe most beautifully planned park.
Well, George Kessler, who was responsible for the Indy Park system and in particular Garfield Park, he actually called it, see if I can find the exact wording here. He says, in 1914, Kessler described Garfield Park as a naturally very beautiful park. And then he goes on to say, it has playgrounds, it has a lot of natural tree plantings, especially beeches. And, you know, he likes the intimate character of a local park. He feels like even though it is, you know, has had this asset of the conservatory, the fountains, and the sunken garden, it still, you know, has a sense of intimacy and still serves as a local park.
Mm-hmm. Does the conservatory go all the way back to the
conservatory
beginnings?
Does go back to 1916. The original conservatory, which had this absolutely gorgeous Victorian line, roof line to it, which, you know, if we think of the Phipps or we think of other conservatories, even the Madeline Elder greenhouse at the Indianapolis Museum of Art, you know, has this very wonderful kind of bulgy, curvy line to the roof. That's what it was originally, but there was a fire and destroyed the original conservatory. So the one we have now was built in the 50s, and it was the country's first all-aluminum greenhouse.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
But it has more of a contemporary roof line to it, which, you know, is perfectly serviceable, but I do kind of long for the original Victorian line to the to the conservatory.
Well, maybe down the road when it's time to replace the 1950s era.
Maybe.
One.
That would be probably big buckos to do that.
And dear donors, dear prospective donors, if you're interested, we'll let you know how to get a hold of Joellen.
we are in the midst of Centennial, which is our fundraising campaign for the Sunken Gardens and the fountains. So we can maybe talk about that later.
Yeah, yeah. So, but Fountain Fest is a celebration of a recent significant investment in and refurbishing of the fountains. So let's talk about what they were like originally. You weren't there at the beginning. I realize that. But
no.
I mean, what they were like and then what happened and why they needed to be refurbished.
Right. They were originally dedicated in 1916. So in 2016, we'll be celebrating its 100th anniversary. And they were designed by a company, F.A. Darlington of Chicago. They were the first in the country equipped with mechanics to change the spray of the fountains and to have this light display. So from the very beginning, they were designed to be lighted for night displays, which I guess was unusual at Grand. I was not there, and so I can only know what I read. The lights could change for the holidays. So like for Memorial Day, they might be red, white, and blue. You know, for other celebrations, they could be other colors. And they, over the years, you know, they've had, they've fallen into disrepair periodically. And probably before this most recent renovation in the late 1990s, with the help of a wonderful grant from Lilly Endowment, the fountains were restored. In part. They weren't completely restored, but they were restored in part. And that also was a dedication in October, which was on the anniversary of the original dedication. And then last October, we celebrated the most recent renovation, which was about $1.25 million from Indy Parks for the fountains themselves, sort of the mechanicals of the fountains, the lighting of the fountains. We moved a lot of the mechanicals from inside the fountains. They were in a vault that leaked all the time.
Oh, no.
And so we moved all of that out into an external vault. And also we've installed the controls inside the conservatory. So one hopes that they will no longer quit operating because of water in the vault or anything like that.
Sure.
But we're faced with some serious issues with the fountains. The original limestone coping or the edges of the fountains is beginning to deteriorate quite badly. Mm. And so that's one of the objectives that we have as a part of Centennial is to, you know, work on that. Some of the steps are, you know, crumbling and need to be repaired. So Fountain Fest is the celebration of the most recent renovation from Indy Parks. We used to have a celebration around the July 4th, America We Remember, and we segued that into now Fountain Fest. And so we've got Kathy Morris, the inimitable Kathy Morris, who really is a wonderful friend of the park, is one of the Music in the Garden folks, and so she'll be there. It's the first night through. It's just from 3 to 7:30 on Saturday, September 13th. It's $10 to get in. You can bring your whole family or buy a table under a tent for 10 people. And that would be $200. So we're really hoping, you know, to make this an annual event to sort of embrace and celebrate the asset that is the most iconic feature, I think, of the park.
And I love that you're doing it early evening so people with kids can bring them. Kids 12 and under free. So
yes,
if you have
that's
little
right.
People,
that's right. And the other cool thing is that Indiana State University is known for bat research. And so for the first time, they're having Bat Fest in Indianapolis. And at dusk, there will be a gathering at the Pagoda in Garfield Park with all these nice researchers. looking at bats, counting bats. That's another family event that people can go to, sort of celebrating bats.
I love bats.
Yes, I do too. I mean, they're quite useful. They eat lots of mosquitoes. And I was out watering the other night, and it was like mosquito war.
Here, so, bats.
Yes, really. We needed more of them.
You know, it's kind of funny because we've had such a cool summer, which as a gardener I've loved. I assume you have as well. But I associate mosquitoes with really hot, really humid weather, and it feels like the mosquitoes are worse this year. It's, go away.
I know. They've been pesky, that's for sure.
Yeah. So there's still funds needing to be raised.
Yes. We haven't actually made public, I think, the total amount. I think altogether we're trying to raise $1 million by the end of 2016. And there are like naming opportunities and all kinds of opportunities available for anyone who wants to donate. GarfieldParkIndy.org. And I think we've raised slightly more or have commitments so far in our soft opening of a little bit more than 100,000.
That's a great start.
It's 10%, so we're 10% there.
Yeah. So I have a question about the sunken gardens. Were they dug out to be sunken, or was there a topographical feature when the park lands were apportioned out, and an early landscape designer said, "Oh, look, we could make sunken gardens here because there's already a dip."
I don't know that. I know that they were designed to be parallel with the street, which would be Garfield Drive. That what we call the overlook, which Kessler named the outlook, which is the space between the conservatory before you hit the steps that go down into the sunken garden. That is also done below street grade, so that the whole impression is that it is the sort of mystery or a little bit of a secret garden that as you approach it, you see more and more of it as you get, you know, closer to the sunken garden.
That's a great design.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's sort of the same element that the Percival Gallagher used of the Olmsted firm at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. If you stand in front of Old Field and look at that, and say you're back in the LA, you cannot see that road, the road that crosses in front of Old Field. It's slightly below grade so that you just have this view of sort of this expanse of lawn. So I think it must have been a technique, and maybe it's probably still a technique that people use to sort of camouflage certain areas and add that element of surprise that you might not expect to find in gardens.
Sure. Do you have a favorite part of Garfield Park?
Well, I really do like the conservatory and the sunken gardens. Those would be my first. We have sort of this unknown little treasure, the children's garden, which is an award-winning children's garden. It's just to the east of the conservatory. It's, you know, chock full of kids all summer long, lots of summer programs. And then throughout the year, there are lots of programs for little kids, like preschool kids, and also children who are being homeschooled. So there are educational science type programs that are available through there. But it won when Garden Writers Association had its annual meeting here in 2011. It was shortly after Jim Wilson died, who was sort of a famous gardener on the old Victory Garden and has, you know, a book author, but loved sharing knowledge and helping people learn about gardening. So when he passed away, Garden Writers named the Jim Wilson Mentor Award after him.
Aww.
And the Children's Garden was the first to receive the Mentor Award, which came with a cash, you know, prize to help the gardens. And, you know, it's really a wonderful place. There are beehives. The last few months we've had big cars, chickens, because they had to move from one part of Lafayette Square to another area in the Lafayette Square area. And so we've had the chickens, which have also been a big hit with the kids.
I'm sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a very cool place, I think. I get a lot of pleasure out of visiting that and talking to the kids and the staff educators with their programs.
Sharon Gamble with Garfield Park volunteer Joellen Meyer-Sharp. Fountain Fest is next Saturday, September 13th from 3 to 7:30. Tickets are $10 at the gate with no charge for kids 12 and under. You can hear Kathy Morris, Cheap But Not Free, and the Filter Kings, and there will be food trucks and activities for the kids. And of course, you can see the restored fountains. Learn more at garfieldparkindy.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. Nouveau's contributing editor David Hoppe has a new book out titled Personal Indianapolis. It's a collection of over 80 columns written for Nouveau over the past 13 years. Travis DiNicola spoke with Hoppe about the book.
David, welcome to Art of the Matter. Always great to see you.
Thank you, Travis. It's great to be here.
And welcome back to Indianapolis. You know, I mean, you're still a presence here, but you don't actually live here full time anymore.
I know. That is the truth. Just over a year ago, my wife, Melly, and I moved up to Long Beach, Indiana. Believe it or not, there is a town
Long Beach, Indiana?
Called Long Beach in Indiana. You know, once I was going through customs and I presented my passport. This was in New York, and the guy looks at the passport and goes, Long Beach, Indiana. There's no Long Beach in Indiana. I was afraid I was going to be stopped and frisked.
Funny.
You know, but no, it's Long Beach, Indiana. It's just this side of the Michigan border, right up there on Lake Michigan. It's beautiful.
Nice. I bet it is. I bet it's lovely.
Yeah, we love it up there.
Very good. Yeah. Well, but you are missed around here, your presence. I mean, both of you. I mean, of course, your wife, Melly, with Susurrus Dance, and it's great to have her back here doing work with Fringe.
Mm-hmm.
And you're still, of course, writing for Nouveau.
Yes.
Online, but not always the regular in-the-paper thing. So.
No, that's right. Actually, in some ways, I'm writing as much, if not more, for Nouveau than ever before, mm-hmm. because the stories are shorter. Mm-hmm. I'm sometimes doing two columns a week instead of just one. But I don't know myself from week to week whether that's going to be in the paper itself or not. Mm-hmm. So people who want to read me should go to nouveau.net, and they will find me up there every week and possibly more than that. I'm also doing cover stories on occasion and mm-hmm. Reviews and other bits of this and that.
And still writing about similar things. I mean, writing about politics and arts and culture in
yes.
the city. And that's what this new book, the collection, Personal Indianapolis, 13 Years of Observing, Extorting, and Satirizing.
Travis, exhorting not extorting.
Did I say extorting?
I mean, it's,
exhorting,
it's such a great gig. Sometimes I feel like, you know, maybe. But yes, this is from Hawthorne Publishing, mm-hmm. One of the three independent publishers left mm-hmm. in Indiana, and I'm really proud of it. This covers really some of the columns I like the best. It's about 80-some pieces in mm-hmm. all over the course of the past 13 years.
How did you pick? I mean, over the course of 13 years, I mean, you were pretty much almost every week.
So
we're looking at what, probably 700-800 columns you had to pick from or something? Or?
There were plenty. You know, you look for columns that are going to stand up, columns that don't have a sell-by date. You mm-hmm. want to have a column that reads as fresh today or tomorrow as it did when whatever happened to prompt you to write the column in the first place happened. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, I began looking through these things. Really kind of dubious, to tell you the truth. I'm not a big fan of books of columns because, you know, you typically write a column based on something that's just happened.
Right.
And what you want to do is either start a conversation or propel the conversation a little further. But I'm fortunate. I've been able to write for Nouveau, which is an alternative paper here in Indianapolis. And consequently, Nouveau's take can be different. I'm able to write about, as you say, an intersection between art, let's say, and politics.
Mm-hmm.
I'm able to see something cultural in something that might otherwise be regarded as strictly political.
Mm-hmm.
And so Nouveau enabled me to have this platform where I could stretch out, try to reframe the discussion a little bit. And in choosing these essays, I was looking for those essays that really stand up, as I say, that still are relevant, still provide ideas, really, and are not just responses or reactions to something that's happening at a particular time.
Mm-hmm. And the collection you have starts off with kind of a fun piece about the amazing locations in Indiana that were designated as potential terrorist targets.
Exactly, exactly. And who knew, but Indiana actually had more potential terrorist targets than any other state in the Union.
I had no idea.
Of course, that was reckoned by people here in Indiana. So it says a lot about how proud we are of our state, I suppose, because, I mean, there were all kinds of things there. All the states were basically asked to, you know, give an assessment for the Department of Homeland Security about how many terrorist sites they had. Well, it turns out Indiana's chock full of them. So I don't know whether that should make us feel safer or make us feel more in danger or make us just feel proud.
It's an interesting self-assessment.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, that's a fun one to start off with. But how did you organize the rest of this? I mean, it's not strictly chronological.
No.
It's, I mean, somewhat thematic.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a bit about that.
I was really interested. I've always been interested in how we think about our sense of place.
Mm-hmm.
I think from the standpoint of Indianapolis, it's always been interesting to me how a medium-sized city in the early stages of the 21st century begins to create an identity for itself. Extrapolating from that, it's interesting to me how we, as people who live in Indiana and people who live in this part of the Midwest, also, how we think about ourselves, how we identify, what makes us distinctive. And so in looking at these essays, I was looking for pieces that all in one way or another begin to kind of find different angles of entry into this question of what is the sense of place here.
Mm-hmm. Did you discover anything by going back through these and looking at your old writings, or did you come across any themes or maybe something that surprised you as you were going back through them? That because in a sense, I mean, when you're looking at maybe a column that you wrote 5, 6, 7, 8 years
mm-hmm,
ago,
mm-hmm.
you're almost coming at it with fresh eyes as a reader, not as the writer of it.
Yes. And I mean, that's the challenge in something like this, because you want this book to be a good read
mm-hmm.
and you want it to be able to be read from beginning to end. You know, the nice thing about a collection like this is that you can pick it up and you can enter in, you can take tastes of it here and there. But nevertheless, you know, you want it to have a flow.
Mm-hmm.
I think by and large, one of the things that struck me was the number of times that I wrote about family, the number of times that I wrote about my neighborhood here in Indianapolis, and the kinds of reflections that those subjects engendered in me.
Well, that's an interesting point, because here you are now living a couple hours away and writing a column still for Nouveau. But as mm-hmm. you said, you know, sometimes it's online, sometimes it's in the paper. That's got to be a very, very different process. Not just the fact that you're writing 500 words as opposed to an 850-word column,
yeah.
but writing from a little bit of a distance now. You're not writing about the neighborhood that, you know, in the, you know, near Broad Ripple or whatever
right.
it may be.
It does change some things.
Mm-hmm.
It changes some things. I mean, obviously, I can't write about the personal experience of being on the ground here in Indianapolis mm-hmm. the way I could before. That makes the column now more issue-oriented, and that can be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got to say, I mean, it's kind of like a homesickness. I do miss being able to turn to my immediate environment in some respects. And I think that's one of the things about this book. I mean, we were talking earlier about how the format of my column has changed. Nouveau has changed.
Mm-hmm.
Nouveau is no longer the same size paper it was. And when Nouveau went to a smaller size, story lengths went to smaller sizes as well. I'm now writing a 500-word column as opposed to 800 to 850. And that's a different kind of performance. And in some respects, you know, that creates a different sort of product at the end. In some ways, it's more about attitude than it is ideas, I think, in
mm-hmm.
some respects. So I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I don't know if there will be a son of personal Indianapolis based on 500-word pieces, or if there could be. But I'm really glad that we were able to do this book now at this particular time, because it does represent a kind of milestone for
mm-hmm.
me and perhaps even for Nouveau.
Is there a favorite piece you have in here? I know that's a difficult question, but
Yeah, I don't
one that you was just like, oh, like, oh, I have to make sure I include that, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, there were a number of those. I think the first one that comes to my mind is the piece I wrote on the morning that we learned that Kurt Vonnegut had died.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a memorial piece.
Well, I know the two of you had become close.
We had mm-hmm. become close. I met Kurt here in Indianapolis in 1991. And that was the beginning of a friendship. We corresponded with one another right up until the end for him. And he was a huge champion of these columns. I mean, the columns that you see in this book that were written up to, you know, March of 2007 were likely read by him and mm-hmm. commented on by him. You know, you can't imagine a better coach
I'm sure
sitting by your shoulder than Mr. Kurt Vonnegut. He was a generous and dear friend, and I miss him still.
Any piece that you can share with us that you're really glad wasn't included?
I'm glad wasn't included. You know, sometimes, as I mentioned before, I mean, when you're writing columns, you're writing from subjects that are supposedly ripped from the headlines, you know, and so there are some columns that you read and you go, well, you know, what does this mean to me now? Mm-hmm. And you just find pieces that in one way or another are redundant or repetitious or just simply out of date. They've
any that you like were going back through and thought, what was I thinking then? Or,
you know, I think that I think it's a pretty good body of work, Travis. To tell you the truth,
all right, okay.
To tell you the truth, I feel pretty good about
that's
it.
That's excellent, David.
And it was really kind of a delight, to tell you the truth. It's interesting because
I'm very glad to hear that.
When this project began, I was thinking not in terms of a collection of columns, but of a miscellany that would include work I've done for theater, long form mm-hmm. essays, even some fiction. And as I started going through the columns, I started going, you know,
just focus on the columns.
Yeah, I think actually this makes a better read.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, you've got some events coming up to launch this book.
Yes.
Right?
That is true. Well, the launch itself takes place on September the 10th. That's a Wednesday night. It's going to be at the Jazz Kitchen.
How nice.
My favorite club here in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. Yats is providing free food. There's going to be music out on the sidewalk. There's going to be music in the club. Dave Lee has given us his B-side room, and I'll be signing and selling books, and I encourage everybody to come and just have a great time. This will be
excellent.
A celebration.
I know you're a big fan of Yats, so
I'm a huge fan of Yats.
So that'll be nice to have.
I'm a huge fan of Yats, so, you know, I'll be the one with the stuff all around his mouth, you know. I mean, plenty of napkins available, mm-hmm. I'm sure. But we'll be doing events then throughout the course of the fall with Indiana Humanities and the mm-hmm. Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library, the Public Library, the ACLU, and others. So please keep an eye out. And a lot of these programs are going to involve public conversations about different types of issues, different themes that are raised by the book. And hopefully it's an opportunity to as I say, engage in some public conversation about some of the ideas that get touched upon in many of these columns.
David, thank you so much for coming in to Art of the Matter. It's a real pleasure to see you again.
Travis, thank you very much for having me.
Travis DiNicola with Nuvo's David Hoppe. His new book is titled Personal Indianapolis. The launch date is September 10th at Yats on College. Indy Reads Books will also have a signing on October 4th. Hey, Travis.
Yeah, Sharon.
Do you know what's going on all over the grounds of the IMA this weekend, this very Saturday?
Grass is being killed? No, don't tell the grounds crew. It's Penrod.
It's the Penrod Arts Fair, indeed. And even though we are, you won't hear us broadcasting from there this year, we do hope you'll come see us at the WFYI tent and come see our colleague Matt, who's going to be hosting a blues stage.
That's right.
And of course, the main reason to go is to check out all the fabulous artists' support, the beautiful artists who come from all over the place and their beautiful wares, and check out all the local performing arts groups and get your season schedule so you can organize your life. We'll tell you about some other arts events coming up on our calendar that we call
What Do We Do? You know what? I've heard a rumor that they're moving the performance stage, so it's going to be a little bit more in the shade for the dancers this year. Yes, that's very
good. Smart.
Yeah,
good
so
deal.
It should be Indiana's nicest day, right?
Indiana's nicest day.
It always is.
That's
always
right.
Well, if you're looking for something else to do this weekend, then you might consider going down to the Indiana State Museum in the Nisource Gallery, because on Saturday from 2 to 3:30, they are having Poet Laureate of Indiana George Kalermas of Allen County. And five fellow poets from across Indiana are going to be doing a poetry reading there. And this is in conjunction with the current 431 Gallery show, which is the show that's all about the 431 Cooperative Gallery that used to be on Mass Ave. So if you haven't seen that show, now is a great time to go check out the 431 Gallery show and then also hear some great poetry on Saturday from 2 to 3:30.
Love it. Hey, you might remember when we had Stuart Hyatt, composer and musician.
Sound guy.
The sound guy, yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you were sort of intrigued by what he does and you play the guitar, listen up. You don't even have to play super, super well, but as long as you can play an E major chord and you can keep time and you own an electric guitar and a quarter-inch patch cable.
Okay.
Okay, so you need to play.
Sure, I got one of those.
You need to play an E major chord.
I got one right here, Sharon.
Got an electric guitar and a quarter-inch patch cable. You're invited to be a part of a special E is for Equinox performance coming up at the IMA in the 100 Acres Nature Park on September 20th at 5 o'clock. This is one of those fabulous events. The IMA has been doing the change of the season events for a while. And the piece Stuart has put together for this is described as short but exuberant, and it sounds a little bit like chance music. So you can find out more by just Googling E is for Equinox and IMA or Indianapolis Museum of Art, because you do need to sign up a little form so they know how many guitarists to expect.
There
just
you go.
Saying.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Hey, another cool art exhibit going on Sunday, in case you happen to miss all the First Friday stuff, or maybe you just need to have some more art in your life. Sunday the 7th from 1 to 4, a celebration of art and design at the Long Sharp Gallery, and that is, of course, at the Conrad. And it is featuring also the work of Barry Lance of A. Lance Design. And they are going to be constructing a room. This is really kind of cool. That's inspired by Andy Warhol's Black Glamma portrait of Judy Garland.
Wow.
And so this is free and open to the public from 1 to 4 on Sunday at the Long Sharp Gallery at the Conrad.
That is way cool. Speaking of change of seasons, I seem to be on a change of seasons theme on my calendar listings here. On Saturday, September 20th, from 6:30 to 10:30, so you could go out to the IMA to 100 Acres and hear the E is for Equinox, and then also go to this party, which is the end of summer party put on by Keep Indianapolis Beautiful at their green headquarters. 6:30 to 10:30, September 20th. Signature cocktails featuring Deep Eddy Vodka Beer from Scarlet Lane Brewing Company. Yes, I said Deep Eddy Vodka Beer. Mouthwatering gourmet sliders from Punch Burger, a hyper-local silent auction, and as they say, many, many more delights at KIB, Keeping Indianapolis Beautiful. And it's worth going just to see their headquarters and check out all their amazing green features. Find out more online. Again, that's September 20th.
Well, Sharon, next weekend are my two most favorite fall colorful events. One is orange and one is green. One is actually orange. That's O-R-A-N-J-E. And you know what the green one is?
I bet it's Irish Fest.
It is Irish Fest. So, yes. So, Irish Fest, the 19th annual Irish Fest, is from September 11th through the 14th. And that is taking place downtown at Military Park, where it always is. And it's going on all weekend long. And it's going to kick off with a pub night featuring three Celtic rock bands on Thursday for only $5 at the gate. And then there's all
sorts... Wait, Celtic people drink?
Yes, well, it happens at Irish Fest. And you know what? And there's sheep herding. That's always the...
I love that.
Yes, yes. And there's lots of great Irish dancing and Irish food and Irish entertainment all weekend long. And then, of course, Orange is next weekend as well. And Orange is in its 13th year. And they're going to have over 30 artists and 30 music acts and interactive concepts and food and craft beer and all types of fun stuff at the State Fairgrounds. And that is on Saturday night, the 13th. Orange.
Orange. Be Orange. There or be square.
O-R-A-N-G-E.
Love it.
Last thing, Sharon?
This weekend, a Beatles tribute called Matthew Street. It's a Beatles cover band recreating the playlist that the Beatles played at the Coliseum 50 years ago this very weekend. No, these aren't really, really old guys on stage. These are some young, hip guys on stage at the Phoenix Theater this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Find out more at phoenixtheater.org.
Sounds great. We'll be back next week with that calendar we call.
What do we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Fall means Indie Jazz Fest is popping out again in the usual venues and all around our town. Sharon Gamble invited Jazz Fest organizers David Ali and Rob Dixon in to learn more.
I know this is the 16th year for Jazz Fest. How long have you two been involved, Rob?
I think since 2009. Is that correct?
Dave, does that sound right?
Yep.
That's it. Yeah, he can confirm that.
Confirm that.
Yeah. 2009.
Does it seem like they come around a little faster every year?
I guess, in a way, yeah, it does. Just because we are always... running behind.
Well, it's, you know, to the public, it's, oh, yay, it's Jazz Fest time. I'll go to a few concerts. But you guys, you're in the thick of it all year long, and you have to plan, you know, a ways out because the acts you want book themselves up quite a ways in advance. So,
yeah, we, I mean, we're always looking at it. But then we're also, you know, we're doing things throughout the whole year. That was kind of one of the changes that in 09 got made was that, you know, instead of just thinking about it as this, you know, 3 day or 5 day or in our case now it's 10 days period. We do things throughout the year. So Rob's in the schools a lot,
yeah.
Really kind of sending the messages, you know, not really approaching it as jazz education, but just selling the art form of jazz.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do a lot of community events throughout the year. We help promote other people's, you know, Madam Walker will have something, Palladium will have something. You know, we just get involved. The big thing that we did last year, and Rob can talk more about this, was the Matisse thing with the IMA.
Yeah,
so.
That was such a cool partnership. For people who didn't get to experience that, what was it?
Well, Indie Jazz Fest partnered with IMA, and they had the Matisse exhibit coming from the Baltimore Museum. And we talked about ways that we could collaborate, and they thought that it was a great fit that Matisse was into jazz. He has actually a collection called Jazz. And I actually know a little bit about Matisse and art work. So I actually took a couple courses in art appreciation and one art history class. So I did a little studying and did a tour. I was a docent and played at the same time. So we played in every room that they had the artwork, and it was really nice, myself and bassist Nick Tucker. And then we also played outside of the exhibit, a handful of times, I think maybe 3 or 4 times, as introduction, you know, and you walk in, and before you see the Matisse exhibit, you hear some music, and then when you come out, you hear some music. So it was the jazz theme with Matisse, so...
It's so fun when art forms can be together like that because it's always a surprise for people, and maybe somebody who thinks, I love paintings, I don't know as much about music, came out of there going, oh, I was into that music, I need to find out more about that.
Right, and it was, and it's good, I think also for, it gives people, I guess, more of something to grab onto, like a connection or something. I mean, we live in such a... instant gratification society. I think everybody, when you go to an event, everybody wants something to be like Cirque du Soleil. They just want to be wild. Where's the carnival? It's like, you know, actually having additional things that, you know, can go alongside with the art, actually, and I think enhance, in a way, the experience for the person coming or the patron coming to see the artwork.
Sure, sure. And this is going to sound like a grant application because I'm sure it was written with that in mind, but, you know, your mission is to expose people to jazz through performance and education, right?
Yes. Take a really broad definition. A lot of times when when we say jazz education, because a lot of times people think, oh, kids, high school kids, and we really like to educate the whole community. So everyone of all ages in all demographics in Indianapolis to talk about and celebrate the legacy of jazz here in Indianapolis and educate people on the history as well as make them have a good time. Sometimes we get into a thing where if we do a concert and we say it's educational, people just don't want to come because they think it's going to be boring. So
it's going to be good for me. I don't want to do that.
Right. I'm going to learn something. I don't think I want to make it. Right. So we just like say, this is a show that you're going to have a great time. And then if you learn something and you know, along the way, that's great, too.
So bonus. Yeah. Hey, so the fall festival, the kickoff is with the Indie Jazz Fest Band. So who's in the Indie Jazz Fest Band?
Well, it's been a little reconfigured this year, and you know, it's meant to be a versatile group. But Bill Langton's going to be heading up this year's offering over at University of Indianapolis and their Crystal Hahn Fine Arts Center, and he's going to be doing a tribute to acid jazz. So Alan Turk Burke, who played with the Spinners on organ, Bill Langton, Vince Jackson on drums. I think the rest of that band's kind of being put together right now, but basically kind of a tribute to acid jazz, jazz of the 60s when rock and roll influences were coming about. And and Bill's a great person to be able to do that, great player to be able to
very versatile
handle that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I know we can't talk about every artist, but we got to talk about Josh. So Josh, poor Josh Kaufman just like got swept up in this tornado. And if you are not a TV watcher, I'll let you guys explain how he became famous.
He was a contestant on the NBC show The Voice and was actually the winner of The Voice. So and The Voice is in their sixth season. So and I believe that show actually this year probably got more press and hype than they've ever gotten before because they actually developed a system whereas if when you buy iTunes purchase of this performance, then it counts as a vote. So I think it made him more popular, created another revenue stream, it made everybody. It was just a win for, I think, everyone. And particularly for Josh because he walks into the situation where The Voice is probably his most popular time. And he is the winner of that, you know, this season. So he's being pulled in about 87 or 88 different directions right now. So
I can't imagine. But yeah. But you guys said be part of Jazz Fest in some way, right?
Yes. And we asked him if he was available. And I think early on he said he didn't know exactly. And then he said, yes, he was available. And I think he's really excited about it. I think he told us at one point of all the things that are happening this year, this is one of the most exciting things that he's doing.
Wow.
Any Jazz Fest. I'm like, you need to say that to every person that you get a gig with. You will be very successful.
No extra charge for the career development advice
right, yeah.
from Rob Dixon.
Yeah.
I'm curious about Música Cubana, it sounds like kind of a collaboration.
It's most definitely a collaboration. There's three different groups really that came together to make this happen. Pavel Polanco Safadit, which is a great piano player, Latin jazz piano player, and his group Direct Contact, along with Sancocho. It's a dance and music collective that's been around for years and years. Tony Iris or Tony Artis and Iris
Rosa.
Rosa, yeah, thank you. didn't want to be incorrect there, but they always put on fantastic things. And then Gerardo Gonzalez, which is the dean of the IU School of Education. This all kind of started where he's from Cuba, but left Cuba when he was probably 11. So he hadn't been back in all that time. I would imagine he's probably in his mid to late 50s now, and he went back a few years back, took a lot of photographs, but, it's kind of coming out of the emotion of returning after all those years. So you had this kind of perception of what it was. And then, 40 some odd years later, what has transpired. So what we're going to try to do, or what we're going to do, I should say, is be able to relay that through the music and through the dance and give listeners kind of a snapshot of not only the traditional Cuban songs, but how they may be interpreted. So kind of a walk through, say, more traditional Cuban music, but also how it's evolved through the years and what you might hear on the streets today. So, it's some of it's inspired by their dance, some of it by their religion, and then obviously all of it by their culture. So,
and that one's going to be at Central Library, and I want to point out that one of the great things you've done is to not only expand Jazz Fest throughout the year, but expand the number of venues. A lot of the concerts are free. A lot of the events are free. This happens to be one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's probably a total of at least 5 or 6 concerts this year that are free concerts. I'd also make mention that a lot of them are accessible to people under 21. Historically, people are asking, the jazz is in clubs. And so, University of Indianapolis, this library concert, the IMA show with Rob out there. These are all the Josh Kaufman show, Maceo Parker show at the Walker. I mean, these are all under 21. So no excuses for those out there
that
are always
right,
saying my kids don't get a chance to listen to jazz, because this is going to be an opportunity where that can happen.
That's great. And that's, reaching down educationally and also it's good business. I mean, there are going to be people later who are going to buy your stuff on iTunes, come to the Jazz Kitchen and
absolutely
have dinner,
right,
and hear a band. Yeah, very smart. Speaking, Rob, of your tunes, tell us about the Indianapolis Jazz Collective, which is fairly new. How did you come up with this idea, and what's the principle?
Okay, well, it's something I've been working on for a while, and it's a dream that's coming to fruition at Jazz Fest, so I'm really excited about that. But the Indianapolis Jazz Collective, I thought it would be great to form a group that was eclectic and unique and did a lot of repertoire from the past as well as very forward-thinking music in jazz. So, have a group that can host a particular guest artist, internationally known guest artist. So we're starting off with a core group of members, myself and Steve Ali, who's a big part of it, who's actually David's dad, great pianist, who's working with Rufus Reed right now, and with Steve Ali, and then Kenny Phelps is going to play with us, and Nick Tucker on bass, and we'll have Marlon McKay from Bloomington on trumpet, and we're inviting Stefan Harris, an internationally known vibraphonist, to be the guest artist with the Indianapolis Jazz Collective. And we'll do a series of concerts in the future where we'll host have another guest artist feature another internationally known talent. And we'll do that until we become internationally known, and then we'll go out and tour.
Hey, that's nice. You've got the career paths. So it's the premier Indianapolis jazz house band with a rotating cast of national and international guest artists.
Right. And, the thing, too, about this group is that we want to be forward thinking, not only in repertoire and what we do, but like concepts and like doing stuff like, the Matisse exhibit, or doing shows with artists or visual artists, or maybe even dancers, or we want to be very forward thinking on the way we present this music. I think there's a way that you should be exposed to something this brilliant,
And people will get a chance to hear you guys during Jazz Fest on September 17th. And you're actually going to be on the IMA Terrace. You got
right.
a rain date, but you're going to be outside.
We're going to be outside.
Kind of cool, too.
Yes, so hopefully we can get people to come out just for the fact that they can be outside with a picnic basket or something, blanket or whatever they want to bring.
Break a leg.
One thing to throw in there on that IMA concert is it is a double bill as well.
Correct.
With Cynthia Lane's going to be on that as well, and she's really, I think, singing fantastic these days. I mean, she's been through a lot of stuff in the last couple of years, and I don't know. I feel like her voice is as strong and as powerful as I've ever heard it. So I think, you know, like you said, with the outdoor environment, with the picnic baskets and the you know, the bottle of wine and being able to enjoy music out there and the high level of this stuff. I mean, he talks very modestly about it, but, you know, these guys that we have here in town are world class. And sometimes, you know, that gets overlooked. You know, familiarity breeds contempt. And so, you know, I think this will be something to dispel that. And it's going to be a fantastic performance.
Sharon Gamble with Dave Ali and Rob Dixon of Indie Jazz Fest, which runs September 11th through the 20th. There are lots of free events and a wide variety of venues. You can get your jazz adventure organized at IndieJazzFest.net. Again, IndieJazzFest.net.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll get a preview of the exhibit about spirits at the State Museum, and we're not talking ghosts.
So, more like bourbon than...
Yes, Sharon.
Okay. Sign me up. I'll find out about the Guitar Society of Indianapolis and their new season.
And then I'll take a look at IRT's upcoming season as seen through the paintings of Kyle Ragsdale. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call...
What'll we do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.